Have you jumped on the Dubai chocolate bandwagon? For chocoholics like me, the holidays mean chocolate. But whether you want to stick with the old favorites or try the newest trends, a global cocoa shortage is making the tasty treat more expensive. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the Dubai chocolate craze and the challenges craft chocolate makers are facing are Maverick Chocolate Company President Paul Picton. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Grateful to have you. And the world's first professional chocolate critic and creator and moderator of The Chocolate Life, Clay Gordon. Welcome to the show to you too, Clay.
Lucy, thanks for the invite. I'm happy to be here and great to be able to address these issues with Paul, who's been a professional colleague of mine for a number of years.
Well, wonderful. Paul and Clay will take part in the Midwest Craft Chocolate Festival that returns November 21st and November 22nd in Rushville, Indiana. You can find a link with details on WVXU.org. Clay, let's start with Dubai Chocolate. Tell us briefly, what is it, and can you tell us just a little bit about its origin story?
Dubai Chocolate, as a product, is a thin chocolate shell. And inside that thin chocolate shell is a mixture of pistachio paste and tahini and a crunchy element, which is very finely shredded phyllo dough. And it is a collection of ingredients which is very, very common in the Middle East. It went viral as a perfect storm. It was created in a small shop in Dubai. It was originally available only at that location. You could only buy it during certain hours. And if they ran out because they couldn't make a lot of it, you were out of luck. And a social media influencer on TikTok went there and it just blew up around the world. And many people said, oh, it's exotic. And you know, it has this interesting name. I'm going to be able to take advantage of it and try to copy the product. And that's why we see it, you know, everywhere from Dubai to your local convenience store.
Paul, what do you think of the Dubai chocolate craze? Do you all make your own version at Maverick?
We eventually caved and did. So when the craze first started, you know, we were sort of caught off guard. It was mostly young people who were calling in like, hey, do you have Dubai chocolate? And took us a while to figure out what they were talking about. But after getting repeated calls, we're like, sure, let's give it a go. And so we do make our own version, you know, with fresh pistachios and whatnot. So it's, we make it as a truffle. So it's a small little bite size for people to sort of explore, decide if they like this type of treat. And I mean, for us, it's been good. It's brought a whole new generation of consumers to the store. And this is very much a Gen Z TikTok kind of phenomena. So we're excited.
Yeah. What do you think, Paul? What do you think it is about this Dubai chocolate that's made it such a big hit, Paul?
If I'm honest, I think it's because it looks sort of disgusting.
And, the green filling.
Filling is just not very attractive. And most everything else we do in chocolate, we try to be very pretty and packaging and everything else. And, you know, I saw the original video on TikTok and it was basically breaking it open and seeing this inside. And, and I think just different people have different ideas of what's pretty, I guess. But I think that's a big part of what caught everybody's attention.
It's so funny that you say that, Paul, because I have enjoyed this type of chocolate myself. I tried to introduce it to my daughters and they were both like, I am not eating chocolate with green stuff in it. I don't know if they thought it was going to be broccoli or what, but
right.
I tried to convince them. I've had to convince other people to try it. No, really. And the people who try it have liked it. But Clay, on your podcast, you talked about how the filling in something like Dubai chocolate can actually be less expensive than the chocolate itself. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, one challenge facing chocolate makers today, especially specialty or craft chocolate makers like Maverick, right, is that the cost of everything is going up, especially cocoa. There's been a global shortage for the last couple of years, and we've seen the price more than double. And it's coming down slowly. That's a good thing, right? But when the cost of your primary ingredient is going through the roof, you have to pay attention to other ways other products that you can make that have ingredients that are less expensive. Now, ironically, one of the things that's happened with the Dubai and Dubai style chocolate craze is the price of pistachios is now 50%, 100% higher than it was before this all took off. And so, you know, I think that for Americans and for many people, you know, they think about, when they think about chocolate, they think about peanuts or they think about almonds. And so the idea of having pistachios, right, it's exotic. And a lot of the appeal is texture. So you have this pistachio paste and you add the tahini to it and it gets really, really creamy. And then you have the crunchy element of the phyllo dough in there. So I personally think that a lot of the attraction is just, oh my gosh, when I put it in my mouth, it's just this really wonderful, unique texture. And that's what I think separates a really good version of Dubai chocolate, right? Which is that textural component for something which is trying to take advantage of the craze.
Paul, what do you see in terms of pricing? I mean, even if it used to be that that green filling made it a little less expensive, you see this Dubai chocolate going at really high prices for some of these chocolate bars. What's that about?
I think it's just people trying to figure out where the market settles out. I happened to be at Costco yesterday and they have big boxes of Dubai chocolate at very, very reasonable prices. And so I think everyone is trying to figure out where's the price point. Like all ingredients, there's a lot of different qualities that are available. So we've tried a variety of different pistachio pastes and most of them we didn't like at all. So we make our own. And so I think with that, you see all that variation. It's the same with chocolate. You can do similar things with the actual chocolate part itself, you know, substituting things like palm kernel oil instead of cocoa butter. And so, you know, everybody's trying to figure out where is their customer, where is their price point.
Yeah. So Clay, is a $30 Dubai chocolate bar necessarily going to be better than a $5 Dubai chocolate bar?
No. Not necessarily.
But probably. Probably.
It's very, very likely. But what I would do is I would make the point that where you purchase the bar or where you purchase the product makes sense. So if you're going and looking for a really good bottle of wine, you don't go into a convenience store. You go into a specialty wine store. If you're looking for a great chocolate, you go into a specialty chocolate store like Maverick. You don't go into your local convenience store. You don't go into your local pharmacy chain, right? You go to someplace that specializes in it. And so finding a very expensive bar in a real weird place, like at the end cap, where you're buying potato chips, that's probably not a good sign, right? Whereas, you know, I've been to, you know, the Maverick store on a couple of occasions and you walk in and the entire environment is all about chocolate and you go, yes, these are people for whom I can trust that they're making good quality product. And I would expect to pay more for that in part because of the environment that I'm in.
We're talking about the latest chocolate trends and the challenges facing craft chocolate makers. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Clay, do you have any predictions on what the next Dubai chocolate craze could be?
I don't have any specific ideas, but I know the elements. Number one is it's going to represent a regional specialty in terms of the flavor combination. So pistachios and tahini and phyllo. It's going to be something like that. And it's going to combine and it's going to be exotic and have this really, really interesting textural component. And as Paul pointed out, it might look kind of off. And so you're going to try it. But I don't think it's going to be, you know, cricket flour chocolate or chocolate with, you know, ants or anything like that in it. But it could very definitely come as a result of, something that is Thai influenced, something that's exotic. And people go, ooh, this is different.
And I would agree. We've seen, you know, even countries like Japan make a completely different range of chocolate than what we see here. You can get Kit Kat with matcha, for example. And so I expect fully that, you know, that's the region I would expect to see something new really developing is those kind of flavor profiles we see out of, you know, Japan or Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Well, if people come to the Midwest Craft Chocolate Festival this coming weekend, there's going to be a company called Chocks and Boxes, where they own a cacao farm in the Philippines. And they make a white chocolate bar, which has got ube, which is a purple potato. And purple potatoes in chocolate sounds like a complete non-starter. Number one, it's a gorgeous color. But number two, the aroma and the flavor and the texture are completely and totally surprising. And this is one of the great things about specialty chocolate makers like Maverick and the kind of chocolate you're going to experience at a small festival like the Midwest is go and explore the boundaries. Go push yourself past, you know, what just, oh, I only like milk chocolate. And I only just go and experience the range of things that chocolate can be, especially from multiple cultures.
Yeah, I've had chocolate covered potato chips. That sounds like pretty darn good.
Well, we had chocolate covered bacon as a trend about 10 years ago. And that's one thing I really like about working with chocolate is one of those things that can be adapted to a lot of different foods, a lot of different cultures. Where the next big hit is, you know, the $1 million question, as they say, but we keep exploring and we keep trying new things and, you know, being able to provide customers with a wide variety of flavors.
Paul, what have been your biggest financial challenges as a craft chocolate maker lately? I mean, we all saw just the cheapy bags for Halloween of the chocolate candy. Those prices go way up. What have been your big challenges?
I think there's sort of twofold. One was, you know, the global shortage just raised prices to record levels. And that combined with, you know, the availability of the beans made it a real challenge. You know, internally, we tried to find ways of, you know, what we could do with less chocolate. You know, we started making things like granola with our chocolate in it, but it doesn't have as much chocolate as, say, an 80% chocolate bar. So trying to find new ways to invent. The more recent one has been tariffs. You know, the tariffs have been in the news all over the place all the time. We did receive good news over the weekend that most of the tariffs on cacao looks like they've been dropped. It was just an executive order. So the industry is still trying to figure out exactly what's where. But I think, you know, those things will help. You know, we've tried to hold off on making any sort of rash price changes based off tariffs, because we have seen that they're on today, off tomorrow, and we don't really want to be on a roller coaster. So we don't want our customers to have roller coaster pricing. So we've tried to hold it, but the more that we can see relief in that, you know, makes both my wife and I a little more confident going into this holiday season.
Sure. Clay, what were the big factors related to that cocoa bean shortage? You referenced that earlier. Paul just referenced it. What were the major factors behind that?
The primary challenge is that the big chocolate industry, so industrial chocolate, has been systemically avoiding investing in cocoa farms and cocoa farmers around the world. And we saw sort of a perfect storm of aging farms, aging farmers, and bad weather, you know, through the El Nino weather phenomenon. So it's too wet in parts of the year when you want it to be dry, and too dry in the year when you want it to be wet. And the harvest was down 10-20% year over year, and it's lower than it has been. So it's been declining for the last couple of years. And so all of a sudden, oh my gosh, we need to get the cocoa. When we can't get the cocoa, everybody wants to buy the cocoa, and they're bidding each other up on the stock market. And that's the primary cause. And then you get investors who are coming in and speculating about, ooh, the price of cocoa is going to go up. If I buy it for 10, I can sell it for 12. And just everything just sort of spun out of control.
Mm. Paul, I know you use ethically sourced cocoa beans. Explain what that means.
So like Clay was alluding to, a lot of the world's co-op or a lot of the world's cacao is grown in really poor, impoverished conditions. And so what we do is try to have a direct relationship with all of the farms that we buy our beans from. So we try to go down there and visit them, talk to them over Zoom or Skype, so that we understand what's going on their farms, and trying to make sure that, you know, they're doing the right things, doing things organically, that there isn't child slave labor, which is a big problem in some parts of the world. And just trying to make sure that we're providing that sort of ethical alternative to industrial chocolate.
And it sounds like that's naturally going to cost more, but talk about why that's important for you and your business.
So it costs more on a, called a voluntary basis. So we typically are paying three times the price of the commodity price of the beans, because for us, it's important that these farms continue to produce a great cacao. We're not looking for the cheapest beans, the exact opposite. We're looking for the highest quality. And these are small little farms, often tucked far away from modern infrastructure. And so in order to get them and to have those farms continue, we need to compensate them. If we're paying just poverty wages, then the farmers will not continue. The kids won't want to stay on the farms. So if we can grow and develop the farms, they produce great cacao that in turn we can then produce great chocolate for our customers.
Clay, do you think consumers are becoming more aware of ethically sourced chocolate? Do you think people look for that and are willing to pay more for that?
The answer is yes and no. So many consumers like the idea of sustainably produced, ethically sourced cocoa, and they will talk about it as something that they're desirous of. But when they go in the store and see the price difference, the purchase decisions that they make sort of belies that interest. And so it's they're the kind of person who has spent a lot of money educating themselves about why it's okay to spend $100 on a bottle of wine or $300 on a bottle of wine, as opposed to somebody said, I'm only going to pay 10, or somebody who's educated them about balsamic vinegar that's 75 years old and certified by the AIB that might cost $2,000 a liter, as opposed to going to Costco and getting a bottle that costs $5 a liter. Those are the people who understand the points that Paul was talking about, which is if you have a cacao which is grown on a farm, the farm is healthy, the trees are healthy, the farmers are able to do the work after the cocoa is harvested to make sure that they're maximizing the potential of the beans so that when it arrives in Paul's factory in Cincinnati, he can make great chocolate with it. The people who understand that are the people who are willing to pay $12, $13, $14, $15 for a bar of chocolate, whereas many people are going, you know, I'm really only going to pay $3 is way too much to pay. So it's a different market for both things.
Paul, do you think there are a growing number of chocolatiers in the Midwest who are using ethically sourced cocoa? Is that becoming more of a trend in this part of the country?
It is. We talk to, you know, new chocolate makers regularly. There's a few that have just opened up in like in Cleveland, a few up in around Detroit. And so we are starting to see that start to develop. When we started 12 years ago, I mean, we were the only people around. I didn't expect it would take this long to develop, but it's a serious investment to start a chocolate factory. And so I think that's, you know, there's a high cost barrier to entry, and that's made a difference. But I think as more people are looking for alternatives, looking for, you know, ethically sourced, as well as just the fine flavor, they want chocolate that actually tastes like chocolate. I think we've sort of found that niche, and we're seeing that now starting to grow.
We were talking about Dubai chocolate and what could be the next Dubai chocolate. I know you have some interesting flavors at Maverick. You've got things like Earl Grey truffles and passion fruit truffles. Are you always looking for that next combination that's going to hit, or does that bring its own set of nightmares if you go viral with something?
We generally are looking for new flavors all the time. We've made 80 different flavors of truffles. We sort of have about 20 that we make regularly. But we are always are trying to see what else is out there, what kind of flavor interests and things, and wherever we can get inspiration. You know, we make a lemon lavender chocolate bar, and most people are like, lavender on chocolate. And yet that's one of our best sellers. So if we get people who are, again, willing to sort of take a little step outside of their comfort zone, can try some very interesting flavors.
Yeah. Well, I know our listeners can learn lots more at the Midwest Craft Chocolate Festival, November 21st and 22nd in Rushville, Indiana. There's a link with more information on our website, wvxu.org. And I've been talking with Maverick Chocolate Company President Paul Picton and creator and moderator of The Chocolate Life, Clay Gordon, who also was the world's first professional chocolate critic. You're both going to be there this weekend, right?
We are, yes.
I am going to be there. I'm arriving early. And one of the great things about this festival is the way is Rushville, Indiana, which is where this festival is. It's in the middle of farm country. And because it's in the middle of farm countries, they understand about cacao farming.
All right.
It's a wonderful, wonderful experience to be there.
Well, wonderful. Sounds terrific. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening. And thanks so much to my guests for being here and talking about chocolate.